Which I have not seen yet, but will. I've been making fun of it, though.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are talking Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. We're going to spoil the shit out of it, and you don't want to do that if you haven't seen this movie yet, because it is amazing.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God. I'm your host, Tim Wick. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Nick Glover.
Hey!
And Molly Glover.
Hello.
Hi. And we are here. It is New Year's Day, 2019.
And
Gaga!
That was supposed to be like the new bird of I don't know what that was.
And you know,
happy new bird.
And we were gonna do a New Year's episode, but then we decided there was something that was more important that we had to get to sooner.
Yeah.
Then talking about 2019.
Urgent business.
Urgent super, business.
Because like there's just some things that they're landmark events, watershed events.
Right.
Moments that must be acknowledged before you move on.
Culturally significant events.
And the culturally significant event we are talking about, and that we are, I think, going to spoil the shit out of.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, is Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse.
Spider-Man!
Certainly.
So, if you haven't seen it yet, I'm just going to encourage you to go out and watch it. I know you
right
might
away.
Be like, oh, superhero movies, all these Marvel movies. I don't know if I want to watch another superhero. Isn't Spider-Man dusted after Infinity
War? Didn't we
Wars?
Just get a Spider-Man
movie?
How many
origin stories are there?
So I'm going to say Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is a really great movie.
It's wonderful. It's beautiful.
I would go so far as to say it is the best Spider-Man full-length movie that's ever been made.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
You think it's better than Homecoming?
I do.
Oh.
I don't know. It's good. I mean, I like it and Homecoming in different ways. Here, and well, you should, because they're very different movies. Homecoming being more part of a rich tapestry of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and Into the Spider-Verse being more of a standalone exploration of Spider-Man, which
the
is pretty
start
fucking
of,
awesome.
There will be more Spider-Verse movies.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
So I want to qualify my statement that sounds maybe like hyperbole. After seeing Spider-Verse, I don't think a live-action Spider-Man movie will ever be as good as an animated Spider-Man movie can be.
That's fair.
Because I feel like in order to truly embrace and capture the movement and the kind of flexibility and action of the character, I don't think live action can do that. I think it will look too unrealistic in the special effects. No matter how good the special effects are, I think it will end up either moving too quickly or not have a stylistic flourish that animation can capture. It looks like comic art walked off the fucking page.
Yeah.
And because of that, because they can capture so many comic book elements in this movie, I just don't think a live action version will ever be.
That's a fair assessment.
As good.
That's a fair assessment, honestly, because
I'd have to judge them separately.
Yeah, it's similar to, you know, I mean, any cartoon is going to, you know, they're going to be able to, the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles aren't as interesting when they are rubber suits as when they can just be cartoons doing whatever, right?
Yeah, like, and then and they'll never be enough if there's just CG, I think.
Right,
I mean, maybe to some extent I can agree with that.
But I agree with Nick. There is something about, you know, the iconic Spider-Man poses and the iconic way that Spider-Man moves that's very difficult to capture with a live action. Because, I mean, the whole point is Spider-Man can move and is flexible in ways that a normal human being can't.
That said, Tom Holland has come the closest so far because he is a perfect, amazing dancer and has the skills, the gymnast and those dancing skills to bring that to life.
There's a scene in the Andrew Garfield Spider-Man where he's in the back of like an armored truck juggling I can't remember what it was because the movie just didn't leave that much of an impression on me. But he's like juggling canisters of something that are toxic or explosive or something like that in the back of a truck. And something about how he is super graceful and dexterous, yet also kind of a klutz, the way he's juggling these, like very artfully, I thought really was a great live action encapsulation of how I think Spider-Man should move and how he should kind of be. But as a Spider-Man, it wasn't as good as the Homecoming Spider-Man.
Yeah, and the animation style, which, I mean, we'll have to talk about that a little bit because there's a lot to unpack just in the way they animated the film. But animation allows you to make things happen with Spider-Man that you really can't do live action. I mean, for Tom Holland, that moment when he's trying to keep the fairy from falling apart.
Yeah.
They really did a good job there capturing the movement of Spider-Man, I thought.
Yeah.
But I do agree that in animation there's just that extra level that you can go to that you can't with live action.
I feel that we had a lot of origin stories in this one because there are what, six?
Six.
That we see?
Spider-Gwen, Miles, Parker, Noir,
Ham,
Penny,
and
Spider-Ham.
So seven, actually.
Seven if you count two Peter Parkers.
If you count both Peter Parkers. And we only see one for about 5 seconds before he's killed and we don't see him again. Right. So you don't really...
I mean...
We don't get his origin story.
A little while.
We got his origin story right at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah. And then when they show us the second Peter Parker, who is like maybe the Peter Parker Prime or like the 616 Peter Parker, we get a very brief recap of his origin story. They speed through it really quick.
A little differently though. Yeah. I liked that. I thought at first it was like, all right, yep, Peter Parker origin story. And then I liked that they repeated it because every time it happened, you're like, oh boy. And so then when you get, every time you got a new Spider-Man, it's like, here we go. Like,
but it's a little different every time.
Yeah, so it's good.
And then you get the point where you get three of them all at once and all of their origin stories are going on at the same time.
Yeah. I love that. So one of the things I've always liked about Spider-Gwen specifically is that for her, Peter Parker dies. That's her Uncle Ben.
Like that's her Gwen.
That's her Gwen?
That's her Gwen.
Does she have an uncle that dies then? Or does she have a corollary there?
Well, he's kind of her Gwen and her Ben.
Okay.
When she becomes spidery, she confides in him, in Peter, their best friends.
Yeah.
And to catch up with her, he becomes her like guy in a chair because he's still Peter Parker. He's still a genius. And to keep up with her, he ends up doing a little genetic tinkering of his own, and he actually becomes the Lizard.
Oh, wow.
She fails to save him, and he dies. So,
interesting.
In that way, he is kind of her Gwen. He is her failure to save someone that leaves an imprint that makes her want to save everyone.
One of the things I liked about that was when she sees Peter, it's just weird. You can tell there's a little weirdness for her, but they don't make a big deal out of it.
No.
Just that she's like, oh, no, my Peter died. You know, and like they're all realizing they have these similarities. I wanted to like Spider-Ham more.
I
wanted to, but because I love John Mulaney and I think it's a ridiculous thing, but it was too Looney Tunes and I don't love Looney Tunes.
But that's what Spider-Ham is.
I know, but I went in ready for Spider-Ham and I left kind of like, oh, okay, not for me.
That's fine.
It's all right. Spider-Ham has never been my favorite spider.
Spider-Ham, by the way, is a pig that gets bitten. No, it's a man.
It's a spider.
It's a spider that gets bitten by a radioactive pig.
A spider named Peter Porker.
Yes.
Who gets bitten by a radioactive pig and becomes Spider-Ham.
How does a pig bite a spider?
A radioactive pig.
But how did it bite a spider eating it?
It is. I'm positive.
All right.
This is a world of speaking anthropomorphic animals.
Yeah, I got it. I understand your issues with Peter Porker. I do, although he was responsible for probably my favorite one-liner in the entire film. So
what's that?
Do animals talk in this universe? Because I don't want to freak him out.
Right.
Yeah. That was good.
That was hilarious. And the comedy in this one I thought was really well done.
Yeah,
comedy was great.
Yeah,
you know,
Miles was great.
Spider-Man should be funny.
Spider-Man should be funny because, I mean, that's part of it. Spider-Man, we talked about this before. I mean, one of the things that I'm always entertained about with Spider-Man is, like, Peter Parker is, like, life just shits on him constantly.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And he always gets up.
And he keeps doing the right thing.
And he jokes his way through it.
Yeah.
That's how he copes. He makes jokes. He's that nerd that got bullied and teased because he's super smart and scrawny, you know, kind of a little dude. And so for him, that's always been a coping mechanism is to tease the bullies back. Right?
And even when he's getting the shit kicked out of him by Kingpin, his response is, I'm going to do some smart-ass comment back or Doc Ock or whatever.
It's how he deals with that incredible stress or the problem. And I think it's also kind of important that while Spider-Man is quippy and funny, his humor should be kind of bad.
Mm-hmm.
Part of, they should be groaners.
Dad jokes.
They should mostly be groaners.
So dad.
And the nice thing is you see all these different versions of Spider-Man. And they all do the same thing, but in their own unique way.
Yeah.
Leading up to Spider-Verse, this past year, I have consumed so much Spider-Man media.
It's true.
So I bought the collector's edition PlayStation 4 with the Spider-Man game just so I could play Spider-Man, which the Spider-Man game for the PlayStation 4 is the best Spider-Man game ever made. It's really amazing. You feel like Spider-Man. A lot of the suits you can unlock kind of tie into some of the Spider-Verse stuff a little bit. Then in the past like 3 months, I've read starting at the beginning of Dan Slott, who is the guy who's now had the longest run of Spider-Man replacing JMS Straczynski. Starting with his Spider-Man and going through Superior Spider-Man, where Doc Ock is Spider-Man, and into Spider-Man Worldwide. It's like 3 hardcover and 5 or 6 collections. Like, it's a lot of fucking Spider-Man comics. And then in between those, reading the Spider-Men comics, which are written by Brian Michael Bendis, which are the books where Miles first crosses over with the 616 Peter Parker.
Right.
And that is where Peter Parker is dead in Miles' world. And our Peter Parker, the 616, like, prime, if you will, Peter Parker, goes to the Ultimates universe, and that Aunt May and that Mary Jane meet Peter Parker when their Peter is dead.
Mm-hmm.
Just like in this movie, Into the Spider-Verse, that happens in Brian Michael Bendis' Spider-Man and Spider-Man 2 comic.
I like that she could tell immediately it was him.
Yeah, because like, he's the same.
Because he's the same.
He's Peter Parker.
They're almost, I mean, and honestly, they are the closest in terms of the split. Like, it's just a very, very slight difference between our universe and theirs. Kind of that AB thing, you know, like in Fringe, where there's a billion universes, but these two are closest, right? And the fact that he just kind of looked at her she just looks at him and she's like, Peter. Like, and it's just that, not even Peter, it's just very like, yeah,
but
love
you're
that.
Not my Peter.
Right.
She knows it immediately.
Yep. Yeah. You're not mine, but
granted, there's a reason we find out that she's able to make that leap relatively quickly, but still.
Yeah, in the No Aunt May is best Aunt May.
Oh, Aunt May is so good in this movie.
So I loved that the dead Peter Parker, the only one we don't really get to spend any time with, has like the perfect life. He has like Mary Jane, and they're married and successful, and she's like, and she knows everything. Everything's great, and like Aunt May is his like cue, basically. Yeah. Like
Aunt May is his guy in a chair,
and he's like blonde and muscular and tall, and everyone loves him. Everyone loves Spider-Man. Like it's very successful.
So
and he dies.
A neat thing about that is the Spider-Man universe with Miles is the Ultimates universe, or like Ultimate Spider-Man. Mm-hmm. It's also known as Universe 1610.
That's where the Nick Fury that we have in the Marvel Cinematic Universe is actually from
Samuel Jackson
version. Yep.
So, and our traditional Peter Parker is the 616. That's like the primary Marvel universe. So the Ultimates universe is kind of meant to be a universe where they can play with the Marvel characters and keep them true in terms of like their themes and their big touch points or tentpole moments for the characters.
Yeah.
But can also like write new stories, do new things, kill people off without consequence.
It's the universe where they can have diversity without a bunch of fanboys screaming about how they're going to cancel their subs.
To some degree it was, yeah. But I think it's great that this super successful pinnacle Peter Parker is the ultimate universe Peter Parker, because mm-hmm. if you distill Peter Parker down to his tentpole moments and just make him be like the best fucking like purest Spider-Man there is, you kind of end up with this like Peter Parker mm-hmm. that is the Ultimates one, that yeah. is the one with the cereal and the buggy yeah. and the, yeah. the layer and all that.
He's the one that dies.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because so he's not Peter Parker.
But the one that did the Christmas album is the one that is alive.
No.
No, no, that's he's the dead, dead one. The dead, dead one is the one that did the Christmas
Spidey
album.
Spidey bells.
Yeah. Oh, my. Who plays him?
It's Nick from New Girl.
I thought he played the one that was alive.
He plays both.
He plays both.
He's both.
Okay.
He's Peter Parker.
Okay.
He's Peter Parker.
He does. Okay, I wasn't sure if he did both the voices or if they just found someone who was a sound alike.
I can't remember the actor's name.
Now, I got to say, we haven't talked about Miles Morales at all. And this movie is mostly about him.
Yeah.
We probably should. Just that, you know, I think they... It's nice because it is an origin story, and I realize that
Jake Johnson.
Yeah,
that we are all perhaps tired of origin stories. And we're going to get another one with Captain Marvel. So get over it. But anyway,
it's gonna be dope.
The great thing is by retelling the Spider-Man origin story over right at the beginning.
Yeah,
what they do is they give you that opportunity to say, all right, well, we know what the Spider-Man origin story is, mm-hmm. and now we're going to tell it again, but it's going to be completely different.
Yeah.
You know, and the shit that goes down with his uncle. Which mm-hmm. is just like
Prowler, Aaron.
And I mean, I had not read the Miles Morales Spider-Man. So is that from the comics? Is that
yeah?
Is
that pretty so close?
That one was like, oh shit.
So in the comics, yeah. his dad is a cop.
Yeah,
and often his dad dies in the video game. His dad dies. Miles is in the video game too. Miles' origin story is during the video game for Sweet. PlayStation 4. Mm-hmm. It's great. So his dad is a cop. His uncle is the Prowler, for sure. Like, that's universally constant. In the 616 universe, Prowler also exists and eventually ends up becoming Spider-Man's henchman, dressing up in a Spider-Man costume to go pretend to be Spider-Man while Peter Parker puts on a public face for Parker Industries.
Oh, nice.
So he is, like, the body double Spider-Man, because he knows Peter Parker as Spider-Man from fallout of Peter Parker trying to figure out whether there's or not there's a Miles Morales in his universe.
Okay.
He finds Prowler. Now, Prowler is also played by Donald Glover in the MCU. In 616, mm-hmm. that character, that Uncle Aaron, that's Donald Glover's character in Homecoming.
Nice.
That's him.
Oh, so we might see Prowler
right.
in the
It'd be
MCU.
Great. We might get Miles.
It's possible.
And for a long time, before Donald Glover kind of got a little bit older, they wanted him to play Miles in a movie.
Oh, that would be...
He's too old now, yeah, but it would have been great.
Because Miles is definitely a teenager.
Yeah, yeah. And then Miles' dad is Brian Tyree Henry, who's Paperboy in Atlanta, which is a great show.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's a great actor. Yeah, yeah. Also working with Donald Glover in that, which is kind of another tie-in.
I want to say who the actor is who plays Prowler, but I always butcher his name, so I'm not going to say it.
Yeah.
It's terrible. I feel like an asshole.
Nick will look it up. I think that another thing I really liked was just like kind of like taking a step back from the story and letting my eyes just sort of look at all the different kinds of animation that were happening simultaneously, because there was, you know, 3D generated stuff. There was flat cell animation. There was, you know, traditional, like Spider-Ham is very traditional.
Cell animation.
There's anime style.
There is an anime style. There, Spider-Man Noir.
The black
was
and white.
All which in black was, and white and grayscale.
It had like the dots.
The sharp, yeah.
They all had the dots. Yeah. They all had
textures.
The printing dots that they used to conserve ink for printing comics. They all also had, stylistically at times, had the overprint, where when they print comics, they'd print like all the black, then all the blue, then all the yellow, then all the whatever in a certain order. And sometimes the stamps wouldn't be aligned, so you'd get color stamped like outside, like bled outside of the edges of the lines. And so sometimes, especially when the camera was super zoomed in on a character but not focused on them, like they were kind of in front of what you were looking at, you'd see that same blur outside, like it looks like someone colored outside the edges a little bit, which was just fucking amazing.
Prowler was played by Mahershala Ali.
There you go, Mahershala. I never want
to. From Moonlight and apparently in True Detective.
He's in the next season of of True Detective.
He's a really great actor. And that character is like, I'm watching it. I'm like, okay, I don't recognize this villain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it didn't occur to me that the villain had some like, oh my God, it's his uncle.
Yeah.
And so it was well done if you didn't know that who Prowler was.
They did a good, and him finding out when he realizes, and he's like, Miles? Oh. And you get that like, shit, like shit. Like, not only did I not want you to see this, like, shit, you're Spider-Man. Shit, now what do I do? I can't kill my nephew. I'm not an idiot. Like, it was a very, like, it brought a lot of good tension without there being a lot of exposition about it. Like, you understood the tension. And I think one of the problems in a lot of these superhero movies is they get all that monologuing where it's like, I never wanted you to see this. I didn't want to hurt you. And they talk about it and they say it. They say it rather than showing it. And this movie did a great job of showing, not telling, and really just putting everything on screen. I loved it.
Yeah.
I really loved it.
Yeah,
even though I had to leave the theater four separate times to have coughing fits in the lobby because my cough is so bad.
I did not expect to really enjoy it nearly as much as I did. My kids were totally over the moon about it. And since my kids are 14 and 19 now, they are cynical little fuckers.
Yeah.
Oh, for sure.
And it's just like that nothing is good enough for them.
Yeah.
But Into the Spider-Verse was. And you know, from what I understand, they have a Spider-Verse 2 that is greenlit, and it sounds like there's a Spider-Gwen movie.
Yeah,
that's
which
exciting,
would be great.
Because she was great.
The Spider-Gwen story is, they're only like six trades out, but they're basically doing like the Spider-Man story in another universe with Gwen as the Spider-Woman.
Mm-hmm.
All the same people are there, but all of their roles are very different. One of the better things about Spider-Gwen is the kingpin of crime in New York in Spider-Gwen's story is Matt Murdock.
Oh, wow.
Mm-hmm.
He offers her like a devil's bargain. Like, it is very much like he's still the daredevil, but he's more like the fucking devil. Like, it's really great. They did Gwenom fairly recently, where they're tying into the Venom symbiote suit with her
symbiote.
But I still haven't seen Venom. Fuck that movie. We have it at home unwatched.
I gotta watch it too.
I'm not in a rush. But yeah, Spider-Gwen's really good shit. Miles is really good shit. He's a Brian Michael Bendis creation, which Brian Michael Bendis appears in Miles' phone when he's scrolling through his phone contacts in the subway. Also, Sarah Pacelli, the woman who's currently drawing Spider-Man with... No, she's currently doing Fantastic Four with Dan Slott, who had Spider-Man for that long time recently.
Yeah. Awesome.
Oh, it's so good. Great.
You should go see it. If you've listened to all this and you still haven't seen it, first of all, why'd you do that? Second of all, just go see it. It's great.
I really want to see it again in the theater.
There's a lot of the movie we did not spoil. There's a lot.
This isn't really a movie you can spoil either. I mean, it's Spider-Man.
It's Miles' movie.
Happens, Spider-Man.
It's Miles' movie, and I feel like most people aren't familiar with Miles.
Yeah.
And I feel like the trailers showed what the movie is about roughly. And I think the heart of the movie is really we haven't spoiled it
all.
And
the main message of the movie is basically anyone can be Spider-Man. You just have to like want to do good. And just have heart.
It's
and,
that Stan Lee quote that they end with.
Yep.
Oh, God damn it. One more thing.
Yeah.
The Stan Lee cameo was so fucking heartfelt and good and sweet. And
It's probably his last cameo
he's got a couple more recorded.
Did he film a lot for MCU stuff?
He definitely has at least Avengers 4 and Captain Marvel.
Okay, good.
Maybe more.
Good.
He might have filmed more than that. Yeah. I don't know. But to me, this is like... the perfect one to have been a Stan Lee cameo after his death.
So, agreed.
None of us have seen Bumblebee, but Hailee Steinfeld is she plays Steinfeld, plays Spider-Gwen in Into the Spider-Verse, and she's also stars in the Bumblebee movie. Yeah. So this is a really great weekend for her right now, because those are the top two movies in the country. They're both incredibly highly rated. Yeah. Like, I'm just really excited for her because she's a great actress, and I hope she does really well.
Friend of the show, Kyle Decker, was like, whoever her agent was needs a raise, because they did the work this year for her.
She's great, so I was really excited.
I mean, she did the work.
Her breakout role was the Coen Brothers' True Grit, which is a movie that you should go back and watch.
Was she the kid?
She was the kid.
Oh, fuck. Grit. All right.
She's great. Yeah. I've loved her since that movie. Like,
I liked that version.
Her career. Mm-hmm. Yep. Awesome.
So it's five questions time, Molly.
It is five questions
time. Do you have
time.
Five questions from a listener that we get to answer?
I do. I have five questions from Stefan Moeller.
Hi, Stefan.
Says, here are five questions from me to you. Question one.
All right.
What's the most unjustified common price point that people have now just accepted?
Glasses.
For example, new AAA video games are always $60. New albums on CD are always $20. New movies on DVD Blu-ray are $30.
Prescription glasses. There's no reason a little bit of metal and glass or plastic should cost as much as a fucking iPhone. It is a travesty.
They're ground to precision.
Yeah, by an automated machine that just cranks the fucking shit out. Yeah. Like, there's a little bit of art and there's a little bit of science and there's a little bit of doctoring happening there, but there's no fucking way. And if you, there's a really good Adam Ruins Everything talking about Luxottica, the company that is basically the prescription glasses monopoly company that owns Sunglasses Hut and Pearl Optical and all the different, even competing with themselves, mm-hmm. glasses places. And the reason, it's just they have a fucking monopoly. So we just accept that glasses are, you know, $500 or whatever they are, because our eye insurance might pay for half. It's bullshit.
Yeah, yeah.
That is a good answer. I have one too.
Yeah, go for it.
Diamonds.
Oh. Yeah.
Because the price of diamonds suggests that they are rare.
Right.
And they are not.
No.
Diamonds are fucking common
as shit.
Tons of them
are man-made now, too, which is even more common.
I know, and
less
what's hilarious is listening to, like, jewelers argue about whether or not you should ever get a lab-grown diamond because, you know, oh, it loses its value. Who gives a fuck about the value of a diamond? Does it look good on your fucking hand or ears or around your neck?
Who's investing in diamonds?
And the thing is that what they say about lab-grown diamonds is they cost 40% less. I'm like, 40% less? They should cost 10% of what a regular diamond Diamond does. Yeah. It's just fucking insane the way they inflate the price of those.
Yeah, I agree with both of those very much. I'm going to say women's jeans. Like, honestly, if you want a pair of women's jeans that aren't just like you can go to Old Navy, right? And Old Navy, that's like going to be cheap ass jeans or Target, right? That's probably, other than going to like Savers or like, you know, a discount bargain store to get just like, we'll call them entry level jeans, you're going to be paying like $30. Now that seems reasonable to me, but if you want any kind of like designer or jeans that are more like fit better or have any kind of style, the price jumps astronomically. Like jeans at Old Navy are like $30. And then if you go to like, you want to go a level up, you're looking at $100, $120 for jeans.
Yeah, there's a serious pink check.
It's crazy.
On jeans.
And people just pay it just because they're like, well, that's just what they cost. And it's crazy.
It's fucking
it's crazy.
Denim. It's goddamn cotton. Come on.
Question two. I love this question. All right. Which of your favorite foods do you think would be most improved by a more intense flavor?
Mm. Ooh.
And I'm going to answer first because I've had a second to think about this.
Okay.
For me, it's mochi. I really love mochi. We just had some yesterday. If you don't know what it is, it's ice cream wrapped in like a sweet dough that's frozen. It's a Japanese ice cream treat. Most of the time, the flavor is very mild, and that's good. But sometimes it ends up just kind of tasting like sweet paste wrapped around vanilla ice cream. I like it when it's got really strong flavor. I had a gingerbread one yesterday that had really good, strong ginger flavor. I've had it before where it's had like a really strong like fruit flavor, and that's really good. So I think generally when I get mochi, it doesn't have enough flavor in it, and I would think I would like them to all have more intense flavors.
I'm going to choose a condiment, not a food. Mm, I think all mustard could be 2 to 3 times more mustardy.
Mm, mm, mm.
I think like Dijon should fucking punch you in the face.
Okay.
Like yellow mustard should taste like it stains.
Okay.
Like I think like brown like beer mustard should like be so mustard seedy and strong and potent and vinegary that it like makes you gasp if you take a breath.
Those are good answers.
Like, yeah, mustard should be fucking punchy in the face strong always.
I like to make stir fries.
Yeah.
And to me, like getting the flavor of the sauce just right.
Yeah.
And I try and it, you know, it's probably too strong for some people because I try and hit it hard with the soy sauce and with the teriyaki. I recently started to marinate the water chestnuts. So you put the water chestnuts in the soy beef broth, and I let that marinate for about 2 hours, and that means that the water chestnuts are just like
little flavor bombs
instead of just being like water chestnuts. And
sure.
It's like I like plain water chestnuts, but that to me, it's like when I can hit that sauce flavor just right, when it just kills.
Yeah.
So.
All right. Question three: do you keep your screens, computer, phone, television, at full brightness all the time?
My phone, unless there's some many other circumstances, my phone is never more than a quarter brightness, and usually is down under 10% brightness.
Okay.
My monitor screens are usually a bit brighter, but I have both prescription glasses, gunner frames, and operating system tweaks to lower the blue light of my screens.
Gunner frames are those yellow glasses that you sometimes wear when you're watching.
If I'm on call and I've been staring at a screen for more than like 8 to 10 hours, I will switch to the gunners sometimes just to deaden it out because it'll make it easier to sleep when I can get it. Our TV in the living room is set fairly bright.
It's like half brightness. It's whatever the default TV's default brightness is, like usually half of what it can be.
When I play video games and you first start up a video game and they're like, adjust the brightness to where you can barely see the logo, I usually have it up high enough where I can see the logo fairly clearly, but not so bright that it's washed out.
I always turn brightness up for video games, for me, my phone is on auto, so I just use the auto brightness, so it just adjusts for me. I don't know what that does. My computer is always at full brightness, and we have the same television, so.
Yeah, my phone's on auto, same as Molly. My computer, I actually tend to have the brightness probably around 80%.
Yeah. Yeah, mine's probably at 90.
If it ever, like, dims, I'm like, what the fuck just happened? And I just like to have things bright. I think our TV's basically on whatever the default is.
Yeah. All right. Question four, and I don't know if Tim's played these, so I don't know if he'll be able to answer, but question four, would the Assassin's Creed series be better without the Animus Desmond framing device?
Yes.
I don't think so. I like the framing device.
I love it.
Yeah. You think it'd be better without it?
Maybe.
I don't think so.
So here's the thing.
I think it's a key part of the series. I think it's integral.
The duration of Ezio, it was important and amazing and really good.
Mm-hmm.
And after they killed off... Oh, we're going to...
Yeah, don't.
After there's some...
Story stuff.
Story stuff that changes in the present day story... And the framing device has a significant change where an imposed deadline comes and goes and there's not much. Like, it felt like Assassin's Creed was supposed to end. And rather than ending, they tried to figure out a way to make it keep going. And maybe they also switched writing staff at that same time. Yeah. Now, Odyssey, I really, really enjoy the framing device.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the same kind of narrative frame before Odyssey Origins, the one in ancient Egypt. It's kind of the same Animus frame for both of those. And I like them both quite a bit. But I think overall the series would have been better without it because it has that schism in the middle that is so disconnected.
Tim, what do you think?
I think it sounds like a great game, and I should play it someday.
Yeah, you would like it. You would like it. Start with number two.
Okay.
Skip one.
Skip the first one.
One doesn't matter.
Okay. Yeah.
All right. Question five. It's a long question, so bear with me. Would you agree with the premise that nostalgic remakes are doomed to fail because the now adult audience has unmatchable expectations based on their individual interpretations of the material from their childhood? I will start. I think yes, I do. Not doomed to fail, but I think they have a Sisyphean task ahead of them in gaining popular support among an adult audience. Now, if the reboot is not intended for adults only, for example, the new She-Ra is not for adults. It is for everyone. It is like a Steven Universe type. It can be for adults, but it's, you know, also for preteens and teens and stuff. So I think that the problem that these reboots face is that people think they need to be for adults and adults expect them to be for them.
Right.
And that is where that disconnect comes in.
The issue I have is with the phrase doomed to failure. I don't think that's true. I think it entirely depends on they are doomed to scrutiny.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I mean, let's take into account not the sequel, but the original Abrams Star Trek went over super well with Trekkies.
Yeah. Yeah, the first one, yeah.
Did it?
Some of them.
Right, well, everybody.
There's always outliers.
There's always douchebags who can't accept anything. But at the same time, you know, most of the Trekkies I knew were like, yeah, I like it.
Sure.
Because what it did was established a new universe without discounting anything about the old universe.
Right.
So, like, everything I love about Star Trek still exists, but now there's a new playground, and that's awesome. So it can work.
Mm-hmm.
It can work. But it is extremely difficult. It is extremely difficult. And mm-hmm. I think for the most part, when it comes to remakes, the best choice is to make your own fucking movie.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because even like fucking Ocean's 11, where I think the remake is head and shoulders above the original.
Oh,
the original,
great.
The original is a piece of shit. It's boring as shit. But you talk to people that love that original and the remake is just a piece of garbage because they can't get past the fact that it's just a different goddamn movie with the same name and a similar premise.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
I think remakes will always be prone to the subject of criticism, especially anyone who's the slightest bit cynical is going to be have a lot of negative things to say about remakes or later edition prequel type stuff. I'd like to lump like the Fantastic Beasts in with this.
Sure.
Maybe even. I don't think they're prone to they're doomed to failure, but I think they are doomed to a split fan base that probably has strong opinions and with that is gonna come a lot of flack and a lot of criticism.
Yeah.
Like The Last Jedi.
Yeah, it does.
Was it a success? Absolutely. Did most people love it? Yep. The loudest people that are still fucking talking about the movie are crybabies who want to edit out all the women, basically.
Yeah.
Basically.
And, I mean, yeah, the Star Wars sequels are a good example where it's like the true Star Wars fans, the people who have loved Star Wars for years, are totally split on it because you've got the people who are like, I want Star Wars to be exactly the same as I've always remembered it, but different.
Yeah.
You know, which is why they don't like The Force Awakens, because it's basically kind of a retelling of A New Hope.
Time is a flat circle.
Yeah.
The Force has patterns.
Yeah, and they're pissed that it's sort of a new version of the story instead of being different like the prequels, which they all hate.
Yeah.
And so, which I don't blame them, but it's just like there is this issue with the fanboy mentality that we can't have nice things.
Yep. It's true. It's
nerds are the worst.
Yeah.
Nerds are the worst. Speaking of nerds, us.
Yeah.
Thanks for your questions.
That new She-Ra is pretty good, though.
Yeah.
So I've heard.
Yeah.
Thanks for your questions, Stefan. And he says, thanks for being such a great podcast.
Aww.
Awesome. Thank you, Stefan. So if you want us to answer your five questions on the air, all you got to do is send an email to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com and we will read them on a future episode. If you are a Patreon supporter, we bump you to the top of the queue. That's right. You get to go before the other five people whose questions are currently in the queue. Just send it on in. If you aren't a Patreon supporter, but you want that advantage of being bumped to the top, not a problem. Go to Geeks Without God on Patreon. Throw us $1 a month. That's all it takes to get bumped to the top of the queue. Then we can bump you to the top of the queue. Then you can just take that money out because you're a jackass. No, you're great. We'll take, if we get $2 from you, we're happy.
Yeah. If you give us any dollar amount, also, you get to listen to our patron exclusive episodes. We have two of those right now. One, we go to psychics, and one, we do a seance-y, summon-y Ouija board, the spirit board thing.
And we'll be doing another one this spring as soon as we figure out what the fuck we're going
to do. And I mean, if you throw us a buck or two and you go check that out, and you listen to them, and then you take away your patronage. That's cool. You paid us for those episodes. We're even. We're square.
We're good.
Give us another buck when the next one comes out, or support us every month. If you give us $2 a month, you get all your episodes early.
All right, so that's enough pimping our show. Thank you very much for listening. We are going to be here next week, as we are always here next week. By the way, this episode is going up on Christmas. So, Merry Christmas.
Go see Spider-Man.
Go see Spider-Man. Bye.
Bye.
So first I said it was New Year's, and now I said it was Christmas. You know what? Happy fucking whatever holiday it is.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. Moral authority, we don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
I'm so dumb. I am so numb.